Welcome to Two Gypsy Plants, the podcast where we speak to plants and big boo-boo-boo.
Boy!
and big boo-boo-boo.
And annoy Sasha. The podcast where we talk plants and...
drink a booze.
Oh. Yay, you got it right. Hello, hi.
My name is Sasha.
And my name is Sasha.
And today, on the podcast, we're going to be talking about... a very spicy topic.
Yes, so what Sasha means is we will be talking about plants and how they propagate, aka plant sex.
Plant sex and plant dirty laundry.
Plant dirty laundry, yes.
Yes, and today we're also, before we go into the podcast itself, we're going to be indulging on rosé from Black Estate. Okay, I'm sorry.
I should have asked you.
Well, you're...
what is the poison of choice today?
The poison of choice today, matching the color of your hair, actually.
Oh, great. It's not pink, though.
Well,
it's like red.
The color of this rosé is also not pink.
It's red-ish, pinkish.
It's reddish.
It's the strawberry one.
It's the strawberry... well,
it smells like strawberry.
It smells and tastes kind of like strawberry. So yes, that's a rosé from Black Estate, 2023, Treblet.
From Waipara Valley, which is literally
45 minutes drive from us, which is great. And also, in my opinion, it is a perfect demonstration of what all the vineyards of Black Estate can do when all of the grapes from them combined in one package. And
does it have like a lot of different grapes?
And treated with love and care.
So, I personally, I don't really have anything else that really... sort of tickles my pickle from Black Estate, but that rosé is like one of my favorite rosés ever, and I'm not a big rosé drinker at all.
I was giving her a taste of Carrick rosé yesterday. It was a little bit too much for her.
It's not really a rosé, that's the thing. Like,
it was Carrick rosé 2014.
Yeah, what I'm saying is like it's not your typical rosé. Anyway.
So yeah, this one has Chenin Blanc, Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Franc. And all of them are picked across three vineyards and pressed progressively and progressively fermented to become one. So it's like three in one. It has a pale pink hue with slight haze to it because it's unfiltered. And the flavors, well, about the flavors, we're going to discover that in a second.
Definitely smells like strawberries. Well, at least the ones that I've tried before smelled like strawberries. So let's hope that this one does that as well. Mm-hmm. It's a nice color though as well. It's like a little bit cloudy.
And it kind of looks like a...
compote?
Mursik. Okay, my one nostril is blocked for some reason.
Because we have spent 2 hours in Botanic Garden and everything is in bloom.
Yeah, and Sasha was like, oh, this smells. And I'm like... yeah, it smells a little, but I took like a big sniff, and at first, was it a begonia? Was a type of begonia, I think.
Rex begonia.
Yeah, but like I sniffed it, like I took a big sniff out of it, but then at first it like doesn't smell a lot, but then it hits you and you're like, ugh!
You can definitely taste the way they describe it is bright aroma of strawberries, jasmine, cardamom, and petrica, whatever that is.
Definitely cardamom.
Mm.
It's a little bit bubbly as well. Like, you know, it's got a bit of a spritz to it.
Well, maybe it's because we have stored it for half a day in the car.
No, like, I've always remembered that it's always, like, a little bit... like, look at your glass. It's got bubbles on it.
Mm.
Like, it's not bubbly, but it's just... it's got a bit more... like, it's slightly sparkling, if you know what I mean.
Well, it is unfiltered, so it does suggest that there is a potential for the fermentation to keep on going. This wine is advised to be drunk now or...
right now.
Right now. Stop listening to the podcast and just drink a wine. Or you can age it until...
No, wait, drink wine and listen to the podcast at the same time.
That's better.
Yeah.
Or you can age it until 2026, which it's not typical for rosés to be aged because they're usually made ready to drink.
Mm.
But if it's a... like... it doesn't mean that the rosés that are made ready to drink is a bad vineyard. It's just different kind of demographic, I would say.
Yeah. I honestly would have had it a little bit colder, but
we were pressed for time.
We didn't have enough time to do that. Yeah. Anyway, so as mentioned before, we will be talking about plant pollination and kinky plant stuff, call it that way. What did you find in your research? I found that a lot of plants are freaking savage just to get pollinated. They do a lot of bad
freaking
things.
Shit.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no, and some of them are just boring as plants. The way I have structured my research, well, research, so-called, it's very low.
It's a discussion.
It's a discussion.
Yeah.
The way I structured my discussion is just quick introduction of what is plant sex and what are the organs used for that, which just the maximum of biology that we're going to do for the whole podcast today. So yeah, as everybody knows, flowers have
anthers and stigmas.
So yeah, everybody knows that flowers have essential reproductive structures, with stamens being the male organs producing the pollen and the pistils serving as the female organs. This is as far into the biology that we will go today.
Well, pollination is also defined as the transfer of pollen from anther, aka stamen, of a plant to a stigma, aka
ovaries.
Yes, pretty much, of a plant, enabling fertilization and then production of the fruit, seeds, and whatever else.
And that's the boring part about it.
Yeah,
the
it is, but it kind of, you kind of need to understand the way it happens just to see how plant uses different
trapping mechanisms.
Yeah. There are also different types of pollination in terms of, like, there are biotic and abiotic pollination types. So biotic, they use living pollinators, such as flies, animals, insects, and obviously there are abiotic pollination methods, which plant uses, like, they'll say the wind or rain in some cases to get pollinated. Yeah, so that's a little bit of explanation because it kind of does touch on the different things in the plants that I found that are quite cool. In terms of pollination and stuff, yeah.
But yeah, I do think that pollination strategies of plants are the more exciting topic to discuss. Mm. Like, it's literally just discussing about the various methods that plants employ to attract pollinators. And the methods usually like vibrant colors, sweet scents, nectar rewards, or sometimes just being black cunning and just involving a little bit of a role play.
Yeah, or being deceptive. Yeah, like most of orchids, as we've discussed in our episode all about orchids, they are actually savage because they lure insects without giving them anything, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very unconsented.
Would you like to start and we go one by one?
Yeah, because actually my first topic is orchids.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that's I called it like a cryptic relationships. So orchids and bees, bee orchid deception. So some of the orchids, like for example, Ophrys apifera, the bee orchid, they appear to be looking like a female orchid, and that is including the shape of the flower itself, the coloration, and it attracts the male bee. Male bee tries to mate with it. Needless to say, it's unsuccessful. But in the process, he kind of picks up the pollen sac from the orchid and transfers it to another, like goes and tries to find somebody else to mate with, and that's how the pollen is transferred from one orchid to another.
Well, we've discussed that in our plants that deceive topic as well, because there were quite a few orchids that look like animals look like insects. And then other insects try to either mate with it or attack it or eat it. Yeah,
that's the visual aspect of how they can be deceiving, not the orchids per se, but every plant, how they can deceive their pollinators to come for them. The other one is the mimicry, or more like scent mimicry, let's call it that, like Rafflesias that we have discussed for the past, I have no idea how many episodes, that smell like rotten meat and flies just go there and because it smells like rotten meat and looks a little bit like rotten meat.
So flies get attracted to it.
And pollinated. The same scenario goes on and on.
Mm. Actually, touching on the topic of orchids, if you don't mind, I'll just tell you about some of the orchids that I found as well. So one of the orchids that I found, I don't think we've talked about this particular one before, is called Acampi rigida. It is a species of orchid native to the forests of tropical southern Asia. And I think it's from the Guangxi province in southern China. What I found interesting about this one is it actually gets pollinated by the rain.
Mm.
So what happens is there was actually a study, because usually the pollination happens during the monsoon season in that region. And whoever was watching the orchids, they did not see that many pollinators actually go into it to pollinate it. So they did a bit of a study and they found that the plant exhibited ombrophily. That's the word. Yeah. So apparently the raindrops, they fall on the plant and the tips of stamens, they get knocked, the caps get knocked off the anthers. And then the pollinia gets ejected upwards into the cavity where the
squirty,
where the stigma is. Yeah, so it results in self-pollination. So the rain, I guess it's gravity-based sort of pollination, but it's pretty cool how plants can actually adapt to the rain pollinating them. But it's a self-pollination using rain.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Just because we are talking about orchids, I thought I'll...
Well, since you have touched on the subject of interesting structures for the plants, I've recently have seen the video where they have presented a very big Nepenthes, the pitcher plant, that is big enough to house a bat. And the reason why it's doing that, because bats kind of unhygienic, sometimes they have diarrhea. So it kind of captures the diarrhea.
To attract more flies.
No, just to use it as food.
What? Okay.
Yeah, so essentially bats sleep in a pitcher plant inside and shit themselves.
Great.
And go out. Basically, it's a bat toilet.
Well, at least they can fly out, because a lot of Nepenthes, they actually trap insects and they eat them.
Yes.
Yeah. There are other orchids as well, like the coriander species, the bucket orchids.
Don't confuse with coriander species.
I think they are also called lady sleepers. No, actually, sorry, no, cancel that. Lady sleepers are the other ones. We actually saw quite a few of them today.
Mm-hmm.
Sasha and I went to the botanical gardens here in Christchurch, into the, I don't remember what the conservatory name is. And there were quite a few orchids and Nepenthes as well, and different plants, and yeah, we just had fun and took some pictures.
It's pretty. Yeah. Go there when it's not too hot, because you're gonna melt your face off.
Yes, it was really, really, really hot today. But coriander species of orchids, apparently they produce aromatic oils that is used as cologne for some bees. So there are some bees, they actually collect a cologne to attract female bees.
Cologne. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it smell like lynx or axe?
Yeah. They do it to impress the female bees. And what happens is the oil is kind of, it's dripping off this little part of the plant, but then there is like a bucket under filled with water. So when the bee tries to collect that cologne, it actually falls into the bucket. And the wet wings and just the bee becoming wet makes it very difficult for the bee to fly out.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a tunnel that a bee can climb through.
Mm-hmm.
And that tunnel, it takes the bee 30 minutes to climb out of the tunnel. And while it does it, it's all covered in the pollen. So when the bee goes to the next orchid flower, it's while going into the tunnel, into the bucket, it actually rubs off all that pollen onto the stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And that way those orchids, they get pollinated, but they make bees suffer, and it takes half an hour for one bee to actually climb out of the flower.
Very claustrophobic.
Yes. So some of the species, they get very creative. I do wonder though if it's a specific if it's like a co-evolved relationship between those orchids and the bees.
Yeah, like surely bees get something out of it besides the workout.
Well, the clone.
And the PTSD.
They get the clone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing I also think that worth mentioning is how the fruits have developed to be able, like fruits of the plants, like any plant, have developed to be able to work together with animals, not with pollinators, but like it's like a further stage.
For dispersal. To be
dispersed, yeah. So what would I like to talk about?
Well, I'll start on that topic if you want me to while you're finding your information. Figs. There are some wild figs, like ficus species, that fatal figs. That's the title of the research that I've done. Apparently, in total, there are about 750 to 850 different figs, the varieties. And some of the figs are actually pollinated by a specific fig wasp. So do you know that fig, the actual fruit, is actually a, I can't remember the term of it, or a synconium. So it's like a bulbous formation that has flowers inside of the bulb.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a small opening in the bottom, and the female bee flies in.
Mm-hmm.
Inside there are male and two types of female flowers. So what the bee does is it lays eggs. Sorry, not the bee, the wasp. It lays eggs on one of the flowers, and then when the bees hatch, they start eating on some types of the flowers, and then they just rub against the other type of the flowers. The male bees are wingless, so they never leave that fig. Their purpose is to chew a hole through the fig for the female ones to escape and go and pollinate the next flower. So male bees pretty much get born, they live in that fig, they chew the hole through, and then they die in that fig. But also, when the female wasp goes into the next fig, it usually loses it because the hole that is designed for the bee to fly in is so tiny, it usually uses its wings when it goes in to lay eggs.
Okay.
So pretty much all the lifespan of those bees is within those figs.
Yep.
But that's how wild figs reproduce. And obviously it's a tiny little wasp that does it. Yeah. Most of the figs that we eat, they are actually sterile, so they are propagated by humans. The ones that you can find at the supermarket. But wild figs are savage because they use wasps.
Wasps' corpses.
Well, they don't use sacrifice. Their corpses, but they it's quite a sacrifice. Yes. yeah. So what did you want to talk about fruit-wise?
I wanted to talk about the corpular walk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just if somebody doesn't
know. It's not the only it's not the only plant that disperses itself that way, but yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah, a lot of plants let themselves, their fruits to be eaten and then excreted. The seeds will end up somewhere meters away from the parent plant.
Yeah, so like the animal will eat it, and then while the actual fruit gets digested in their system, they will travel further. Yeah. Yeah.
And why I'm mentioning the corpular walk is just because it's a fun fact that people use that pre-digested seeds to then further ferment it themselves and roast it, and then we have it as a coffee. But that's done by the cute kitty who eats the beans.
Rodent? I can't remember. We had that discussion before, and I can't remember.
It was either a kitty or a rodent.
Yeah. It's a novelty, and it's, you know, something special to Indonesia, because kopi luwak comes from Indonesia.
Some people do the elephant poo coffee as well.
Do elephants eat coffee?
Apparently.
I would have thought that it would be quite poisonous to some animals, just because obviously the seeds have quite a bit of caffeine. Yeah. Another sort of touching on that base, I guess, is, you know how a lot of plants like peaches and apples, they have cyanide, like small doses of cyanide in their seeds? They actually do it that's actually for a different purpose, like for a completely opposite purpose than Kopi Luwak, let's say. Instead of plant wanting the animal to eat the seed, it has cyanide to actually make sure that the animal does not eat that mm-hmm. seed. So they eat everything around it, exposing the seed and just leaving the whatever is left yep. to propagate, to germinate and grow. It's interesting how nature works, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And how everything just sort of adapts and co-evolves. Yeah.
But also besides the sexual reproduction, I wanted to cover the asexual reproduction, which has quite a number of different types of spreading / reproducing for the plant. One of them will be like, I would call it a cloning magic, because some of the plants can just
clone themselves.
Well, yeah, clone themselves. They will shoot the runners or tubers, and that will become a genetically identical plant.
Are you still raving about Pendo?
Yes, still going back into the Pendo. But also, if you want to talk, Pendo was the tree that is like spread across the kilometers, and it's just one tree.
It's one of the biggest clone colonies of a plant in the world. One of mm-hmm. the biggest. Yeah, I think the biggest one is in the sea. We've spoken about it in one of our episodes as well. I cannot remember which episode it was in particular. The most. Yeah, the most of the plant world.
But if you talk about something that is a bit more down to earth and not just Pendo, well, the Twitch.
Oh, the Twitch? Like the local Twitch?
The local Twitch, that's the same thing. Like it just goes underground.
So Twitch is a type of grass that is an absolute menace, and it's a very awful weed to have in your garden.
Once you have it.
Yeah, we have a lot of it on the hills especially. So it's very different from your lawn grass, and you will see that it's different. And as Sasha said, yeah, it's the way it spreads. Do you know that like Mondo grass does the same thing?
Oh.
Yeah, so it goes under and it actually sort of shoots from the ground and keeps spreading like that. A lot of plants do that, but Twitch is just so notorious because the whole system is very long and it's very difficult. You can't just tear it apart. You actually like end up pulling massive systems yeah. out of the ground.
Mm. Yeah, yes, it ends up being one plant with not much of a genetic variety, but the other advantage of that is that the plant just literally takes over the whole area and kind of outcompetes every other plant.
Also, if you think about it, any
apple, I don't like thinking.
Any apple orchard of the same variety is technically the same plant. It's just cloned. Because we've discussed it before, apples, if you propagate an apple from an apple seed, it's going to be a completely different apple. Mm-hmm. And in order to keep the variety of the apple the same, like let's say Granny Smith or like a Java apple, all the apples are grown, the new trees are grown from cuttings, hence it's cloning.
Same genetically.
Yeah, it's cloning of the plant, hence they are the same genetically. And yeah, the next time you see an orchard and you see the same variety, let's say one row of the same variety of apples, most likely it is the same plant. Yeah.
Yeah. As when I mentioned the Twitch, it was not propagating by suckers or by the runners. It's based on rhizomes. So it's the rhizomes that go under the soil.
Yeah.
Just if anybody wants to get technical about it.
Yeah, it's a whole web of notorious weed on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have quite an interesting plant again.
Yes.
It's called Darwin's Slipper, Calceolaria uniflora. So it is a perennial plant, originally from Tierra de Fuego. I am sorry if I'm butchering this name. In the southern part of South America.
I think we just need to head it to our beginning. Welcome to the
disclaimer.
Two tipsy plus where we speak to plants, drink booze, and butcher names.
Yep. So it is a mountain plant. It's about 10 centimeters tall, and it is pollinated by a seed snipe, which is like a little bird.
Seed snipe.
Yeah, it looks like a
pigeon.
More like a thrush, I'd say.
I don't want anything to look like a thrush. Disease.
No, thrush the bird.
Oh. I know.
So what happens is the bird eats the conspicuous white floral appendage of the lower lip of the flower. Like if you look at the flower, it does look quite funky. So the bird...
It looks like Entremet.
So the bird eats that white part. And while it's eating that white part, which is very high in sugar, so very attractive to the bird, the plant knocks... It's so funny, like that top part. Mm-hmm. It keeps knocking the bird on the head, hence covering the bird's head in pollen.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously when the bird goes to the next flower to eat another, that white part of the flower, the same happens. And the pollen that's on the bird's head gets picked up by the plant while the other, the new yep. pollen gets dispersed. But it's so funny how like the plant actually like knocks on the bird's head. Yeah.
Enough, you had enough.
Yeah, but it's a kind of core evolution
mm-hmm.
Where a plant and a pollinator, they co-evolve together to function together. Do you remember one plant that we've discussed that does exactly the same? It's a palm.
I love when you do that to me.
It's from Madagascar.
Is it the blue color seeds one?
Yes.
Yes, I don't remember the name, thank you.
Traveler's palm?
Traveler's palm.
Also known as Ravenala.
Where... Yes, absolutely.
And who pollinates them?
Lemurs.
Yes.
The ones that like to move.
Yeah, so the snout of the lemur is the perfect size to actually get into the flower and get the seeds exposed pretty much, yeah. But those lemurs are the only pollinators of the plant, and lemurs, they specifically eat that fruit of the plant, so it's another example of
it's a very niche pollinator, let's call it that.
Yeah, but which makes it, I guess, it's very interesting, but also it's very dangerous, because yeah. if lemurs get endangered, obviously Ravenala palm gets stressed.
Well, it doesn't have any more pollinators, like well, the main pollinators.
Yeah, the natural pollinators, call it that way, yeah. because obviously humans can always do that, but there are a few plants actually that lost their pollinators, and now the only ones that can pollinate it are humans. But also a lot of plants are sterile, like saffron, let's say. Because it's sterile, it has to be pollinated by humans.
Saffron?
Yes, we've discussed that as well. My God, your memory is like a memory of a goldfish.
Who?
Yeah. What else have you got?
The other asexual way of reproducing, which is bulb, or you can call it bulb buddies. So essentially you have potato, for example, or
patata.
Rosie? Yes, my dog is a pure potato, always potatoing on a couch.
I guess it's a explains why she's not propagating, because she's fixed actually, but otherwise you'll have small little patatas.
She's out of soil. Maybe yeah, once I'll bury her.
Yeah, put her in a small, in a dark space. No, wait. Yeah. Okay, that's getting dark.
Mm-hmm. Please don't call SPCA. But yeah, bulbs will create smaller bulbs on their sides. This way, those smaller bulbs create another plant that is genetically identical to the parent plant. Examples of the plants that do that will be potatoes, the corpse plant, the any of your bulb flowers, like
tulips.
Daffodils. What is the other one?
Hyacinths?
Yes, thank you. Hyacinth. Anything bulbous.
Yep. I've read about this plant before in I think it was 80 Plants Around the World book. It is called Victoria Amazonica, which is the second largest water lily in the world.
Mm.
So what's so cool about this lily is it co-evolved like a mutualistic relationship with a species of a scarab beetle. And what the flower does is... it opens up, right? So it's a white flower. It opens up and it smells quite fruity. So it attracts the beetle. Sometimes it attracts two beetles as well. So it will attract a male and a female beetle. Hello.
I have that picture of that plant on my phone because I've seen it in Australia.
Oh.
And they have a bloody description on the tablet and I'm trying to find it.
Yeah. So, yes, the lily will attract beetles and it can attract both female and male or just one beetle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flower closes for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens during the night is either beetles will have some fun if it's two beetles, or otherwise they are, or otherwise they will eat like on some tissue, like a starchy tissue that the plant provides. But also during that time, A, the plant becomes a little bit warmer, and B, it changes color from white to like a sort of blush pink. Yeah. So obviously when all this kinky stuff happens in the flower and
the flower gets embarrassed.
And when, or otherwise, yeah, if the beetle like eats parts of the plant for nourishment, it gets covered in pollen. And then the flower opens just slightly to let the beetle out. And then when the beetle flies out, it goes into the next flower to feast more. And obviously the same thing happens where the pollen will get sort of spread into the other flowers. But apparently all of them open at the same time fully to trap the beetles, yeah, all of the flowers at the same time. And then they'll close up and then they'll just open slightly. And then beetles keep jumping from one to another to actually pollinate them.
And now a little bit from the Botanic Garden in Australia.
Where in Australia? Where?
This one was in Adelaide.
Mm.
So, what they say. In order to make seeds, plants use all kinds of seductive tricks to attract pollinators.
Is that also Victoria Amazonica?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the wild, Victoria Amazonica effectively sets up a nightclub for the scarab beetles. So, 5 p.m., darkness falls. The Amazonica is open for business. About 60 pure white petals fill the air with heady scent, a giddy mixture of tuberose, banana, and ripe pineapple flavor aromas.
Ooh, I'd love to smell that.
Guaranteed to attract a beetle business. 8 p.m. Beetles begin to arrive, landing clumsy as is their habit. Just as well as petals are designed for easy night access with the visibility and stiff for stability. Beetles meet and greet, then proceed inside for food, drink, and dancing. 9 p.m. There is like a whole fucking schedule
dancing,
here.
Dancing, yes, dancing. Yeah, they're dancing in there.
9 p.m.
I guess it's a kid-friendly tablet that was next to the lilies.
It was next to the pond, actually, with lilies, which
were
is
they open?
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
One female and four males are now inside, sucking nectar and munching on petals. The males begin to dance. Who will she choose? 10 p.m. 12 beetles are now inside. Temperature outside is around 25 degrees Celsius. It's getting hot in there.
Yep.
Which
is fascinating that the flower can actually raise the temperature. Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, 25 degrees Celsius, but inside the flower, it is more like 26 to 35 degrees Celsius. Mm. Perfect for action.
Boom, boom, boom.
A beetle would normally have to eat 100% of its own body weight in a day to stay this active. But in this heat, it can survive using just 2.5% of its energy that it's required for mating. So fast forward to 6 a.m., That was 10 p.m. from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
That's a lot of action.
Yep.
They must be tired.
Closed petals trap beetles inside. Mass mating in steamy warmth. Ah, yeah. It's like a bullet point. Closed petals trap beetles inside. Mass mating in steamy warmth. Pollen supplied in large amounts on many anthers that are getting rubbed off on hot beetle bodies.
Arr.
5 p.m. From 6 a.m. to 5 p.m., open petals, now pink, pollen powdered beetles pile out and fly off to another lily for a second night of petal powdered passion and pollination.
Mm. Yeah, I like your description a little bit more. Just to clarify, this was quoted from a botanical gardens in Adelaide. Yep. Is that correct? Yes. Yeah, so some plants actually provide not only they get action themselves, but they should also provide space and
a dance floor.
Atmosphere for a dance floor. Yeah, yeah. it's a dancing club. It's not any other club. It's not a Swiss.
Whatever she means, but we get what she means. But I do wonder, what does she mean?
What does she mean? I'm singing a lot today. Sorry. Yeah. Speaking of other fascinating sort of plants that do different pollinations and stuff, do you remember we saw Kalmia today in the botanical garden? So Kalmia is, I see it like a plant that is similar to rhododendrons, not because, you know, it's similar to it, but because they don't mind growing in the shade or in the sun.
Acidic soils?
Yes, and they're quite poisonous as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They're beautiful plants, though. So, I accidentally closed my notes. Hold the line, caller.
Hopeless.
Bish. So, hold on. You squeeze me. I'm loving it. Blech. So, Kalmia latifolia, which is also known as mountain laurel, is it comes from actually the same family as rhododendrons do, and it is native to eastern United States.
Mountain laurel. So, is it related to bay leaf?
Well, no. So, it is. It's the namesake of Laurel County in Kentucky, the city of Laurel, Mississippi, and the Laurel Highlands in the southwest Pennsylvania. So it's actually location-based, Laurel, the name. Yeah.
So just for people who don't know why I'm asking about the bay leaf name, scientific name is Laurel.
Laurus nobilis.
Yes. Laurus nobilis.
But like, let's say, I'm having brain fart. Prunus.
Open the window.
Brain fart. Anyway, so Kalmia, it's a beautiful plant, as you saw, like it has kind of star looking. We'll actually upload pictures to Instagram. Mm-hmm. It has like star looking flower when it's not open. And when it opens, it looks like a little, also a star color that way, but like with a lot of points.
It's very like geometric looking
as
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's almost like hexagonical.
The one that looks like, the one that has name, attraction? No.
Carousel?
Carousel, thank you. I'm just sitting here, just waving my hands like, this thing that goes round and round.
Well, we are doing a video podcast again, so whoever is watching on YouTube or on Spotify video can actually see what you're doing. Don't forget about that.
Yeah, sometimes I forget him. If you see me pulling weird faces.
Or picking his nose.
I don't. You did today, though.
Before we rolled the camera. I didn't pick my nose. I have two piercings in my nose and one of them just got stuck. Sure. Sorry. Anyway, so back to Kalmia, yeah? what it does is it's like quite a remarkable pollinating plant. Ooh, thank you. And it is pollinated mostly by hummingbirds and butterflies. So what happens is if you look closer into the plant, it has quite an interesting method of sort of dispersing its pollen. As the flower grows, the filaments of its stamens are bent and brought into tension. So they are quite like they get quite tense. Stressed, you know, a lot of stress, so they get tense. Anyway, they are quite tense. And when insect lands on the flower, the tension is released and the pollen is kind of catapulted onto the insect.
Oh, so the insect will be catapulted.
Like, wee! No, the pollen gets catapulted and it gets catapulted onto the insect. Hence, like today I was like touching the flower, so I was like, I want to see that. But I guess it's so microscopic, you won't see it with a naked eye.
Or maybe it was all set off already.
Possibly. Or maybe it actually did catapult pollen, I just did not see it because pollen is quite fine.
You're also quite blind.
In that too, yes. So many variables, eh? But apparently it can fling its pollen up to 15 centimeters. So that's quite a distance for a tiny little flower to fling its pollen.
And that's why you don't trust girls with the measurements. She's like showing like 35 to 40 centimeters.
Well, I mean,
I'm like, this is not 15 centimeters.
It's usually the other way around.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah.
Seriously. She's a good wife.
Boy. Yeah, because we were actually, I completely forgot about that plant because I knew the way it sort of gets pollinated. But then when we saw it in the botanical gardens, I was like, actually, I want to talk about it on the podcast today.
And you wanted to talk about how to propagate it. Was it about that plant? Because you said it's a very interesting way it's propagated.
No.
But you probably wanted to say pollinated.
Probably, yeah. Maybe. Did I say propagated? Yes. I would assume you propagated from cuttings as well.
I was very excited to hear, like, what is different about this plant being propagated?
I might have wanted to say pollinated, sorry.
All good.
Yeah. But that's kind of all that I have on my list.
I just wanted to actually circle back into propagating stuff, because since we're talking about plant sex and similar, like the plants that are ending up being clones of themselves, we might as well talk about the seed propagation.
Can you give us an update on your orchid propagation? Because you did mention that you did some cross-pollination of two different varieties of orchids, actually.
So I have done a cross-pollination of Phalaenopsis and cross-pollination of... I've taken the pollen from Phalaenopsis and put it into Oncidium orchid.
Which should not happen and
should not work. But because my Oncidium have dropped 7 or 8 flowers, and one of them have worked actually and still is attached to a stalk. So we'll see.
Yeah. So the same thing happened when Sasha tried to pollinate two of my Phalaenopsis orchids as well. So I guess it's a rejection mechanism, maybe, because the two flowers that you've actually put the pollinia in, they two dropped, but the other ones are still on the plant. So I guess it's a rejection mechanism. We have a video of how Sasha did it at my house, although that specific pollination wasn't successful, but this is the way you can do it. And obviously that did work for your orchids, Oncidium, which are two different species.
Which is weird.
I actually did see it yesterday.
But also the chances are like 1 in 10. I assume.
How many flowers did you lose? 9?
Well, it's still dropping, but out of 11 flowers, I have only 3 left on a
pole. Did you put in every flower? Did you put it in every flower?
No, I think I've put at least in 6 flowers.
Because I did see that, like, it started forming a little bean, like, called that way.
The thing, like, not stamen.
It honestly looks like a little clitoris.
The thing that looks like a little clitoris is starting to get a bit thick.
It's starting to grow.
Yes.
It's going to grow into something longer.
And that's what I remember happened with my previous orchid 10 years ago when I've tried to... No, sorry, 20 years ago.
You make us sound very old. Like, you expose how old we are.
Well, because I am old, fuck.
But yeah, like, I did see that orchid and it... Because you had another orchid that wasn't pollinated and it did look very different in terms of that little bean, call it that way. Yeah.
I was able to find it.
You were able to flick it. But sorry, I just was quite excited about it because it was, because it didn't work with my two orchids, but we'll still post the video of how you did it. Although just keep in mind that particular pollination wasn't successful, but the one that Sasha did, the same method. And that Sasha did at home worked for his two orchids.
Maybe it's also kind of, I have no idea how the companies do that, but maybe they're like sterile.
Possibly. But
to protect their...
I mean, it's at-home pollination. Come on.
I have no idea. But yes, to continue the topic, I just wanted to say, like, why not cover the propagations as well and different types of propagations that we can do?
Yep. We've got about 10 minutes to do that.
Yep. Yep. So the first step is the seed propagation, the easiest one.
For the outdoor plants, yes. For the indoor plants,
I mean, it's the easiest one just because the quantity of the material you get.
Yeah.
You may get like 100, from 100 to 1 million seeds, and at least one of them should germinate. And it's all easier to you if you can get it to a mature plant.
Yeah, I actually grew New Zealand spinach. Sorry, I cannot remember.
Mine have never, never germinated.
Oh, really?
You have given me, so many seeds. Yeah. None of them have germinated.
Holy shit. I've actually put them in my, you saw my troughs behind. Two of the troughs are taken by, I cannot remember its scientific name, sorry. By New Zealand spinach, and a lot of them are germinating now. I think I've actually overplanted that little trough. But they keep self-seeding a lot. The other one that keeps self-seeding in my garden is the calendula flower, because it spreads like weeds. Even though it's in a trough, it just keeps growing. Mm. But I grew calendula just so I can make the tea out of it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. For a second, I was like, do you mean...
Not marigolds, no, calendula.
The poor man's capers.
No, that's nasturtium.
Nasturtium
does the same thing. And the weirdest thing, I'll actually take a picture of it because it is in flower now and it is sprouting, is it's growing from my rocks. So I have my troughs, they're sitting
It's a rock daisy, but not rock nasturtium.
Because it's sitting on a weed mat, a plastic weed mat, which honestly, do not install it in your house. The house actually came with that area with plastic weed mat and rocks. I had some nasturtium.
Because I'm quite enjoying having
the... It destroys the structure of your soil.
How?
Plastic. Plastic weed mat.
Mm-hmm.
So plastic does not let water through.
Yeah.
So the soil dries out. But then when you have extreme rains, the water still floods. It's the same principle of exposing your soil to extremes.
What about if you use the irrigation system that keeps your soil moist?
It's still really bad for your soil.
Okay.
It just loses all the structure and nutrients. If you want to keep it weed-free, just a very thick layer of mulch. You will have to top it up every 1 to 2 years, but this is the healthiest way for your soil. And that way you'll probably also have a lot of worms, which are good for your soil. Yeah. But yeah, the nasturtium. So we have a two-story house, and on the second story we have a little balcony slash deck, call it that way. And I had my nasturtiums growing in a pot on the deck.
And now it's growing in the backyard.
Well, because it started flowering, and then it started dropping the seeds onto that rock area, and now it's growing there. And I actually don't get rid of it from there, because I like collecting the seeds to make poor man's capers, as you've mentioned.
Why is it called that way? And what does it mean?
They kind of taste like capers if you marinate them in vinegar. Apparently, that's what they say. It doesn't really, but actually, I really like the taste of it. You've tried it before, haven't you?
I've tried it. It's all right. It doesn't taste like capers whatsoever.
No, it doesn't taste like capers.
It has same texture, though, but it's more peppery.
Yeah, and a lot of people actually like that because some people don't like capers, but they prefer poor man's capers. Mm-hmm. But also, the flowers are quite pretty. They attract a lot of pollinators, and they're edible. Yeah.
Also, another good thing about nasturtiums, they attract
aphids.
Yeah,
they're used as companion plant. Yeah.
So yeah, it will draw aphids away from the plants that you want to actually harvest your crops from.
Yeah. Well, I really want to turn my garden. Like, we're going completely off topic, but I guess it is. No, well, no, because I'll bring it back. So I want to turn my garden into a meadow style garden. So I want to have grasses. Probably carexes, native grasses, but also exotic perennials. Because in New Zealand, we obviously have native pollinators, but we also have exotic pollinators. So I'd like to provide for both. And
lavender!
Well, yeah, I'd have some lavender. I'd have some echinaceas, rudbeckias probably. Carexes, I want a few more lamp ears. It's a small garden, you've seen it, but with my plan, a bigger portion of it's going to become an actual garden. Originally, I did not want...
Just in case you don't remember, she's a landscape architect, so she can go for hours.
Well, yes and no. My own plan is very cheap.
Well, that's how it's supposed to be if you're doing your own plan and you don't really care about Porsche stuff.
No,
on it.
I actually want to make it functional. Yeah.
Yes.
And I want to grow artichokes in that particular meadow-style garden. I originally did not want to have lawn either, because lawn is shit. It's a monoculture, and it does not promote any biodiversity. I need something for my dog, so it kind of has to be...
Have a clover lawn.
Yeah, but it will be everywhere. It will actually encroach into my garden, unfortunately. So I'll have to have... My lawn
is... You will have to have the high board.
But it goes underground. So it has to be deep board. Because clover actually spreads just like grasses.
What about the thyme lawn?
I feel like, see, the problem is it's going to attract more bees, and then my dog won't be able to actually go on it to wee.
True, because he's very friendly pup who is going to be
he's gonna eat
to sniff
bees.
It or eat it.
Yeah, so I'll have to have a bit of lawn. But with my meadow-style garden, I will attract more pollinators that will eventually go into my troughs in my veggie garden to pollinate it and give me more fruit. So it's one way to pollinate to make your garden a bit more productive is to introduce plants that actually attract pollinators. Mm. Yeah, and that's something that I really want to do in my garden. And hopefully we will be doing it this Christmas. Hopefully. Yes.
Yay for that. So yeah, seed propagation. Easy. Just because of the amount of the material you get.
Yep.
Also, another advantage is the genetic diversity that you get from the plant. Because if you're doing every other variety, that's going to be the same type of plant genetically.
Yes.
Which is also good if you want to try this, to try to keep the same characteristics of the plant.
Yeah, they do say that because the only problem with that, and a lot of people regret that with apples, let's say when they have massive orchards of the same plant, is plant becomes susceptible to
disease
just because it does not naturally evolve to fight it. Yeah.
It is the same genetic
composition as the other one. Yeah, so disease gets itself. Used. To the same genetic composition.
Yeah, it just takes one plant to fail, and then the whole of the garden is going to be completely screwed.
Yeah, so it's quite... I was just reading about that as well for this research, and yeah, apparently a lot of people are actually a bit sad that this happened, but otherwise
said
we won't be able to have... Really? Oh, wow.
That's South Island 2010, I think, when...
Oh, did they lose the whole, like, orchard?
The whole orchard was lost because... I think I've discussed it in one of the episodes when they have exported the pollen from China.
Oh, yes,
that was
that's
supposed
right.
to be artificial pollen, but that also kind of introduced the bacteria, the virus, and the whole orchard got
eradicated. I think that was the MPI and biosecurity episode, which is episode 3.
Cutting propagations. That's the easy way to do that.
The house plants.
The house plants, welcome.
Yes, half
to
of
the
my
house of all plant, house
half,
plants.
Half of my house plants in my house came from cuttings from Sasha, so yes.
So yeah, cuttings are the easiest way to get plants. Well, easiest.
Well,
if
not
you
a lot
have
of,
a big
not
plant.
All plants can be propagated by cutting, but most of them can.
Well, if you know where to cut.
If you know where to cut, yes, definitely.
Like for orchids, you probably can't do much, although I have heard that you can propagate by cuttings from the flower stem.
Oh.
So
I guess it depends on the variety of orchid.
Phalaenopsis, apparently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who the hell knew? But I haven't tried yet, so don't quote me on that. Philodendrons, easy. Anything that has
Monsteras.
A node. Monsteras are easy. Anything that has a node, you
Hoyas.
Cut. Hoyas, easy. Anything... Yeah. Anything, you stick it in water, it
actually,
roots.
Hoyas is the only plant that you have a lot of cuttings from my plants in your... Because, like, I'm pretty sure Carnosa and the red buttons, if you still have them, and fishtails.
I actually don't have Carnosa anymore.
Oh, my Carnosa. If you follow us on Instagram, you probably saw...
It is today on stories.
Yeah, I've posted it a couple of times on stories. Far out. That thing has more than 10... florets on it at the moment, and at night I can smell it in my bedroom, which is the opposite end of the house.
And that's how you know that it attracts, but its pollinators are mainly night pollinators.
But
it's very potent smell.
It's very nice, like it smells, don't get me wrong,
it
smells nice
sweet,
and sweet and honey-like, but it sometimes it gets strong.
Mm-hmm. And if you have hay fever, good luck to you.
Well, Max is doing okay, actually. I thought that he'd be sneezing more.
Maybe he's just getting used to it.
Yeah. But because in our house, we have UPVC windows, which you can just crack open, just like you can see it behind Sasha,
on top,
probably, if you're watching our podcast. In summer and at this time of the year, we usually keep all of them open. And when it gets windy, the house becomes very drafty. So that smell fills the whole house. Yeah. It smells nice, don't get me wrong, but it can be quite potent, as you mentioned.
But also, if you saw the stories today, it drips the juice all over the place.
Oh, did you post the pictures today? Oh, nice.
So, basically, she has two reefs. Well, one of them is a reef.
Yeah. Which is the Carnosa.
Yeah.
And the other one is just, it's sort of standing on my kitchen cupboard because I've got high ceilings. I don't know if you can see it from the video here. This is actually the highest in the house, believe it or not. But, oh, actually, no, the kitchen one is the same height, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of ceiling space. The red buttons is sort of on that end of the room.
And you can see definitely from the picture that there are some droplets of sugar liquid accumulating, and that just drips.
What is that small one that is in my office called? I've actually realized that I have another
Bella.
Yes, Hoya Bella, yeah. Mine has the flowers forming, but what happens every single time is...
It drops
like half before of them it actually, before it starts flowering? Yeah. But hopefully we will
mine
take
never
more
flowered.
Pictures.
It have produced a lot of flowers.
What
pre-flowers, but before it actually opened up, it drops. I'm like, can you just do it once?
What I would suggest is fertilize when you see, like fertilize now. Because I feel like that helped, because I fertilized last month.
I don't have any more Bella.
Oh, you want some more fertilizer? I've got the...
I don't want Bella.
I actually really like it, and the planter that I have.
You know what irks me?
Yeah.
There are two types of Hoya. There is Hoya Bella and Hoya Mini Bell. And Hoya Bella is with small leaves. Hoya Mini Bell is more looked like a Canosa. So it just does not make sense.
I actually need more Hoyas from you. I want more Hoyas.
Okay.
I definitely want to collect Hoyas. And I definitely want to collect orchids. I've decided that I want to collect orchids.
But there is always a stage in your life when you're like, okay, I've explored all the plants. I know which ones I can deal with.
And now I can
collect the ones that I can deal with.
Yeah. But before I do that, I actually need to get rid of a few more plants. I've moved a lot into my bathroom, if you saw that. And I love the way the peace lily is now there. Meg's actually said, he came out yesterday and he's like, it's actually nice with a few more plants in the bathroom. And I was like, that's the first time he's actually said that it's nice that a room has plants. Thank you, love. He listens to our podcast. That's very nice. Yes.
All right.
Anyway,
cuttings, seed propagation, division. You know about division because you deal with Calatheas.
Oh, yes. I haven't divided my long planter of Calatheas.
Well, that's why you have a bloody trough full of Calathea.
I'll take a picture of it as well.
I am bloody jealous. I can't grow Calatheas for the life of mine.
Hey, believe it or not, my my colleague who also listens to our podcast. Hi, Haley. She has Calatheas in the office as well. She has is it Orbifolia, the big one?
And that's the easiest one for me.
And another one, I can't remember which one it is. But even
looks
there,
like. Green with stripes, or
it kind of looks like zebra, kind of
zebrina.
Yeah, but
or
I honestly can't remember. Hold on. Okay, this episode is going to be more than an hour because this is the second time the camera is like, oh no, I don't want to record anymore.
Well, the thing is that we didn't know what to talk about, but I think just having conversation is always fun.
Oh, it's back to it. Hello, are you recording? Yes, you are. Yes, awesome. Yes, so my colleague, she has Calatheas on her desk, and even they are not doing that well. And she takes quite a good care of them, like she waters them in time and stuff. But I think I would have thought that maybe it's just the environment in the house, but then those Calatheas actually moved from another house to this house. So I don't know. Maybe it's just me and they like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know how
it's the energy, it's the vibes.
Yeah, you know how there is that controversial... actually, it's a book. Plants. I actually started reading that book.
Plant Vibes.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's quite a controversial one, which kind of says that, you know, plants can think, sort of. And you start reading it, and honestly, you just get... I started questioning a lot of things, and I started reading the reviews and the actual scientific reviews of it. Mm. And yeah, it's very controversial, so I stopped reading it just because it's...
It is quite controversial, and I have seen several of... videos/read several of articles which are like 10 to 20 years old, where they have attached the clips to the plant and
Like, that's exactly.
And they have shredded the plant in front of the plant, and it was scared.
That's exactly the one that I'm talking about. So it was the same person who wrote that book as well. Mm. The Secret Life of Plants, that's the one. If you're interested to read it, do. But then, honestly, take it with a grain of salt, because it's not... That was the only study.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, Calatheas, because I've split quite a few of them, and you had a few of my Calatheas, and then all head. Of them died. Yes.
Emphasis on head.
Do you still have any Calatheas?
I have Arbifolia and I have Zebrina. Those are the only ones that have survived, because I have left them alone in a bathroom.
Your Arbifolia that you gave me is doing amazing, but it's covering all the rest of them, because Arbifolia is obviously the bigger leafed ones.
I used to have Macchiana, and I quite enjoyed it, and I thought I can grow it, but because it looks very hardy, but it just rotted away for me.
The hardiest one is the one that has, like, if you look through it, it has a lot of lines on it. I can't remember the name of it.
Mosaic?
Yes, because I think that came from you as well.
What?
I think so, and you also gave me the snake one.
Yes, the rattlesnake one.
Which is doing okay, because it almost died.
Dead. It almost died. Was like two leaves, and yes. One of them is dead.
But honestly, I put all of them, except for one, into the trough. Because I have five different ones, I think, in one trough. And honestly, they're doing really well there. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to just give you some water and some fertilizer. And I honestly don't even want to split them. What I do is I take some leaves off sometimes if they start covering the other plant. Mm. Especially the Orbifolia ones. Yeah.
So yeah, division. How do you do that?
You have to dig up the plant. You can do it with peace lilies as well. Peace lilies are probably the easiest ones to
just
divide.
Rip it off. Anthuriums, they have babies as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes. So you just dig it up, and you need to find, call it a knot maybe, where the leaves are coming from. Like, you actually need to find where you can split. You cannot split in the middle of that leaf, because the whole plant will die. But if you see two sort of adjacent, call it babies, that are right next to each other, but you can see that they're actually separate plants.
You can definitely see the center where the leaves are coming from.
Yes,
and those converging centers, you can cut in between them.
In between, you can split them, yes. That peace lily that I've talked about just 10 minutes before in my bathroom, that is about maybe 15 different peace lilies in there that came from the same plant. So if I actually dig that up, it will probably give me anywhere from 30 to 50 little babies if I was to do that.
Anywhere from 150 to 200 doors.
See, I'm not that big on Facebook market. I hate it.
Yeah, that's a little bit too complicated. Like, the amount of time you spend there trying to sell the plants to how much you get in return does not really go.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a good way. We've done that before with Sasha as well, where I bought one Calathea and you bought another Calathea, and then we just split them to share. Because Calatheas and
PCs. And now she has a lot of Calatheas and I have none.
But you have more...
Hoyas, philodendrons, Monthyras.
You have a lot of philodendrons, and philodendrons just didn't do well in my house.
Mm-mm.
No, they just don't. Yeah. Yeah.
Layering.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I have two more Calatheas in the kitchen, because that's a Calathea as well, isn't it? The ones that you gave me? The massive ones. You actually took a cutting of one recently.
That's not Calathea. That's a prayer plant. That's Xynanthe.
Oh, Xynanthe. Yes, I always confused them.
But it's fine. Everybody confuses them.
Layering?
Layering. Air layering.
Is that when you put like a little...
Speck moss ball thingy? Yeah. Yeah, so you clean up the stem of the plant.
How do you clean it up?
Well, by clean up, I mean take a knife, clean up the cambium, which is the...
Strip it a little bit.
Strip it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
If that's something like a rubber plant.
Or scar it, maybe, called that way as well, yeah.
If
a rubber plant!
Yeah. If it's a don't worry, we're not going to scar you. If it's a philodendron...
Talking about this secret life of plants, and I'm listening to you.
If it's a philodendron, you just air layer where you have the air roots. And air roots is like, in every node, you have like a bump.
Yeah.
That's the air root.
Yeah.
Same goes to Hoyas. You just air layer. By air layering again, put the speck moss ball and keep it moist.
Yeah. So it will just start forming roots on the plant without you cutting the plant, but you can always cut it later once the roots are formed.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's more...
Easiest way to transfer it into the soil and have a established plant straight away.
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit more fail-proof in terms of just taking a cutting and putting it into water. Like, it gives you more chances of that.
There is not, like, your plant is not going to root away, rot away.
Yes, yes, it gives you a bit more chance to actually form the roots and make a cutting out of it. Yeah.
Then we have grafting.
A lot of apples are actually grafted.
Mm-hmm. A lot of apples, peaches, anything that is stone fruit that's grafted.
Yeah. I can't remember any stone fruit being grafted, but I could. What about, oh, no, actually, no, no, no. Yep, yep.
That's 50 different plants tree. Like,
50, is there like a grafted plant that has 50 different varieties in it?
Yeah, it's a Japanese guy. The guy from Japan whose project was to create a tree that flowers / blooms, that blooms and produces different seasons of the year.
So pretty much the guy is the Victor Frankenstein, but the Japanese version of it, and a horticulturist. And the tree is the Frankenstein's monster, aka, you know,
aka super producer.
Yeah, aka has
but
a
it's
lot of different
super cool,
ones.
I think.
It is. I mean, it's cool, but it always makes me question the boundaries of nature, you know? Like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm not a greenie or anything, and I'm not against, like, you know, GMOs and stuff like that. I believe in science, but it always makes you question things, like, you know.
But
did nature actually intend that to happen? It just makes me question, that's all.
But also,
those questions are coming from the finished bottle of wine.
But also, it is like, if it does not get rejected, sure, try it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Yeah. Going back to your orchid thing, where you've decided to
if it doesn't get rejected, see what happens.
Yeah, and I think we'll see what happens, but it would be curious. Maybe you've created something.
Nah, it might take like 9 months and I'll end up with the sterile seeds.
Not true, but it's still cool though. Keep taking pictures of it because I think it would be interesting. Yeah.
Tissue culture. We have discussed that before already. Mm. You essentially take any part of plant and you put it on a petri dish with all the hormones, whatever you want. And over the time, it will create a very small plant on agar-agar, which is... What do you describe as that? What is agar-agar?
It comes from a type of seaweed.
It's a jelly. It's a jelly substance in a petri dish that you will put some nutrients into.
Agar-agar is also a vegan substitute to gelatin.
Yeah.
It's actually quite yummy. Like the candy that's made out of agar-agar is actually quite yummy. It has different texture. It's not as chewy and stretchy as your gelatin.
It's more like a marmalade rather than a...
Yes, kind of. Yeah, but it's still, I think it's a good substitute though.
So, tissue culture, if you want to know more about that, refer to the previous episodes of Two Tipsy Plants.
Do you remember where we've talked about it?
Stress.
Was that the orchids one?
It is. It will be the orchids one.
Yeah, because I think it's the all about orchids episode.
The other option is bulbs offset.
Well, what is that?
So you essentially make sure that you're monitoring that your bulb plant is producing a bulb, and you will monitor that bulb that it's going to be next plant for you, aka your corpse plant, for example.
Okay. Oh, we actually saw a corpse plant. It wasn't flowering. I don't think that particular one will flower in the next few years.
Well, I have no idea how reliable is the information that it flowers every 7 years. In my understanding, when it has enough energy, then it will flower. But it, yeah.
Sorry, speaking of corpse plants and arums, is it called arum?
Arum, yes.
Yeah. Very fun fact that I found recently is Sasha has actually mentioned it before that you have the arum cognac in your it's called konjac actually in your garden and
amorphophallus,
that's right, it's not arum, yeah, amorphophallus, and the konjac one is actually edible.
Mm-hmm.
And I randomly found it out through another colleague of mine. She gave me a little, it's like a Chinese snack, because that particular amorphophyllum is actually native to the region where she's from, And actually, I've got some. I was supposed to give it to you, so I'll
also
give it to you.
If you go to your nearest cheap box store, aka
like a Chinese
rep, no rep, rep, and I will not say the name of the box store, but you can put the analogy together. Rep and conserve.
Okay, yeah.
There is in a vegan store, they have pasta that is made from konjac.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, that particular konjac is I actually really like it. Yeah, I'll give it to you.
The pasta is shit though.
But well, I just use it. It's spicy, and you just put it on rice and have it as a snack. Yeah. But that's a cool thing that I found, that it's actually edible and it comes from the same family as the Kopsman. We also can talk about it forever, and we kind of need to wrap it up because it's been an hour and 10 minutes now.
Okay. Suckers and runners, that will be your strawberries.
And robinias and other trees as well. Yeah.
And Sasha, would you like to wrap it up for me?
I'll try my best.
In a box with a wrapper, because we're getting close to Christmas.
Oh.
Oh. It's the most wonderful time.
I don't know what to give to you just yet. I've got a few ideas. I've got an idea for Daria, but not for you guys just yet. I've got an idea for Rosie, that bull, Rosie, the Sasha's dog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining in on our plunge. No, hold on. That's a wrap on Two Tipsy Plants today.
You fucked it up.
I'm doing it without reading. Yeah. So thank you for joining in and listening to our plunge shenanigans today. We hope you enjoyed it, and we really appreciate your support. We see the listener numbers growing, and it's just nice. It just feels nice, because obviously we still do it in our free time, and we do it just because we enjoy it. So thank you for your support again.
Yeah, for everybody who is asking me the question every time that they meet me and they know that I'm doing the podcast, I'm doing that just because this is my hobby and it's not giving us money. So
it also gives us an opportunity to keep studying and learning more about plants.
And wine.
And wine. Yeah. But yeah, thank you again. And keep it green.
And keep it tipsy.
Sasha's out.
Bye.
Bye. Oh god, it's gonna be a long one to edit.